It is Free Talk Live, and it's the live Sunday edition of the program. As always, we invite you to join us right here, toll-free, on the radio at 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
Johnny Ray.
And Mark.
We're starting out with a special guest. We don't do guests very often here on Free Talk Live, so you really do have to be special to be a guest on the show, because it's, you know, breaks from our normal format, which the normal format here is open phones all the time. So if you do have something you want to call in about, you're welcome to do it after we get done with our guest here, who is a returning guest. He's Roger Veer from Bitcoin.com. Hello, Roger.
Hi, guys. Always nice to be with you.
Yes, and good morning to you. You're over in Tokyo right now, where it is 8 o'clock in the morning, so thanks for being up, and I'm sure you probably would be up anyway, because you're a productive kind of guy, an international person who was recently signed on to a pretty big news headline for the Bitcoin cryptocurrency. Now, for our listeners who are maybe brand new to the show, brand new to Bitcoin, Mark, what is Bitcoin? How do you describe, you know, elevator pitch?
Yeah, Bitcoin's an international currency that you don't have to, when you hit, you know, borders, you don't have to change it. It's just with you. You don't possess it. It's on the internet. Mm. So it has never been hacked. There has never been anything that sort of would shake the foundation of Bitcoin. Certainly, there have been situations where people have been robbed of their Bitcoin. But hey, they get robbed of their currencies too. So Bitcoin, it is the next generation of it, or at least the door to the next generation of money.
Yeah, and Roger was instrumental in getting Free Talk Live to kind of come on board with Bitcoin, and sort of at the same time, we were also instrumental in helping Roger find out what Bitcoin was in the first place. He saw the vision of it as a, you know, real tool to kind of undermine the power of the state and the banks in our lives, because Bitcoin, one of the most, I think, important things that it does and has done, is it's taken the power of money out of the hands of the banks and the state, the states of the world, and has put it into the hands of the people, which it's really hard to, you know, kind of overstate how important that is. That's a huge paradigm shift in the idea of money. And that's why, I think that's one of the reasons, Roger, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but one of the reasons why you got excited about it, is that right?
Yeah, you have it exactly right. Bitcoin has the power to undermine every single government on the entire planet's ability to control the money supply. So as a libertarian or a voluntarist, I can't think of something that's more exciting than that, because obviously all of us that, you know, understand economics realize that that'll make the lives of every human being on the planet that much better.
And I don't think it just has the ability, but that was what it has the design. If you take a look at Satoshi Nakamoto's 8-page white paper, and I don't know when it's from, 2009 or thereabouts, about Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto appeared to have this sort of idea in mind.
He pretty clearly did, and it's pretty clearly working. And Bitcoin's having a lot of issues right now that everyone's arguing about. But it's important to take a step back and realize that the reason Bitcoin is having these problems right now is because it's gotten so popular and so many people are using it that everyone's fighting over who gets to use it.
Yep.
So it's if you're going to have problems, these are the exact right type of problems to have, I suppose.
Yeah, I've described it as growing pains, and it is very painful to watch all of this happen as what was one time, at least apparently, on the surface, seemed to be sort of this united group of people who just wanted to do what was best for Bitcoin, now split into at least two factions of people who are severely at disagreement over how to grow Bitcoin into the future. There has been this group called the Bitcoin Core. These are the sort of head programmers on the project, many of whom seem to be just fine resting on their laurels, and they're okay with the crazy fees that have been growing. Just, I guess, I don't know what the percentage is, but we've been saying at least 1,200% since 2015. But that copy was written months ago now, so it might have been 2,000% or more. I mean, the fees have been insane, and that has, I think, driven a lot of people away from Bitcoin and had them investigating these other cryptocurrencies out there that are competing with Bitcoin. And Bitcoin has been losing its market share as a result of that fairly consistently over the last 3 months. Then there's this other group, which you're involved with, Bitcoin Unlimited, that has been pushing for an increased block size, which will allow for more transactions per minute to be processed on the Bitcoin network. And so recently, you know, this conflict between these two sides, we've been reporting on it here on Free Talk Live. It's been going on for a few years now, but it's been getting particularly bad within the last several months due to the escalating fees that users now have to pay. I could pull up my wallet here. We just got back from Social Sundays tonight, a weekly get together of some of the libertarians here in the Keene, New Hampshire area, and we go to a place called Local Burger, which is an actual physical location, a mom and pop kind of business that that accepts Bitcoin. And I'm just pulling up my details right now from my Bitcoin wallet. It looks like the fee was 0.0007 Bitcoin, which is probably like basically a just under $2 worth of Bitcoin to send what was approximately at a $11 or $12 fee, or at $11 or $12 total purchase.
Yeah,
so like a $2 fee. 3 years ago, Roger, that fee would have been what, 2 cents?
Yeah, maybe less than a penny. And it up until around 2012, 2013, the majority of Bitcoin transactions were actually free if the coins had been sitting at an address for long enough. And the part that's so frustrating for me and for anybody who's actually trying to use Bitcoin in commerce is that the current Blockstream and core developers openly and actively say that they want high fees. A number of them even say that they want the fees to go over $100 per Bitcoin transaction, which I don't know about you, but if Bitcoin transactions cost $100 each, I wouldn't be using Bitcoin.
No,
I would be using something else. And there's 1,001 different alternatives out there that people are able to choose from. And we're seeing more and more people starting to choose those alternatives. In the fact that Bitcoin's share of the overall crypto coin market cap has dropped below 50% for the first time ever.
That's right.
And that happened right in time with when the fees for Bitcoin began to skyrocket. And the part, it would be one thing if this was unpreventable, but we have these devs openly saying, oh yeah, this is a great thing. The fees are high. Hooray. We're accomplishing our goals. And no, that's the exact opposite thing we want to have for Bitcoin. It's terrible for Bitcoin.
When
that's right.
When you say the Bitcoin devs, it's my understanding that there are hundreds of devs. So I've been told. You know, like I can't say I'm in the loop.
Some are bigger devs than others, though, right?
And you know, who are the devs, and are they all run by Blockstream? And how the hell did this happen?
So there's about a half dozen to a dozen guys that the majority of which are employed by Blockstream. And the part that's really frustrating is you guys know who Gavin Andreessen is. He's the person that Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator of Bitcoin, turned over the entire Bitcoin project to and turned over the software GitHub account to. He's the one who contacted you guys and told you guys all about Bitcoin.
Yep, that's right.
And he was a fantastic steward of Bitcoin and kept Bitcoin on the right path for years and years until he made the mistake of inviting these other guys in and giving them access to the same account. So they shared access to this account. And then about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago now, these other guys, without Gavin's permission, kicked him out of the account and removed him from the account, deleted his access to the account.
That's a hostile takeover if I've ever heard of one.
Sounds criminal to me.
And they did it under the guise of thinking, oh, maybe his account has been hacked. And then as soon as they found out his account hadn't been hacked, they said, oh, yeah, well, we're not going to give you access back anyhow.
Wow.
Which is just absolutely ridiculous. And these people have a completely different vision for the future of Bitcoin than Satoshi had, a completely different vision for the future of Bitcoin than Gavin had, and a completely different vision for the future of Bitcoin than I have. And it's so bad now that the Bitcoin blocks are so full that people want their Bitcoin transactions confirmed. Another website that runs a Bitcoin mining pool now accepts payments via credit card for people to have their Bitcoin transaction confirmed.
I saw you posting about that, I don't know, several weeks ago, it seems like, about this site, BTC.com. And I actually tried to go there because there's a Bitcoin vending machine here in town. We had the fees set too low because the fees have got just like doubled in the last month. And we had the fees set too low. So a couple of the transactions, actually a few of them, had been stuck. And they were stuck for like 2 days. So I actually went to that site to try to use it to speed up those transactions being confirmed. Unfortunately, I was unable to utilize it due to unable to add a credit card to this Alipay system that they require you to pay with. Luckily, I found a Chinese guy who said he knows a miner, and then like he took a payment in Bitcoin from me. And sure enough, he got those things sped right through. More coming up with Roger Ver from Bitcoin.com. This is Free Talk Live, and we are talking crypto, specifically Bitcoin, and its future. Is it a bright future for Bitcoin? I think all of us want it to be. But is that going to be the case? Because there's been this sort of internal geek war been going on now for a while. And of course, Bitcoin.com, we've got Roger Ver on with us from Bitcoin.com, the founder, the man behind Bitcoin.com, not the creator of Bitcoin. Bitcoin.com is Bitcoin itself was created by Satoshi Nakamoto back in 2008. And actually, we were just talking about the white paper that he wrote before the show tonight. Mark, you've actually taken the time to read the full 8 pages of that. It came out, was released to the world, and has become the world's number one and first cryptocurrency with currently right now, I think, about $2,185 per Bitcoin is what a one Bitcoin costs. Roger, when you bought into Bitcoin, was it like 10 cents? Do you remember how much it was when you bought your first Bitcoin?
It was right around a dollar.
A dollar. Okay, so you got in late.
Well, I sent the wire to Mt. Gox when they were about 50 cents, and they didn't credit it to my account until it was about a dollar.
Jeez.
So that, I still did okay on that.
Yeah. And now here you are today. You've been dubbed Bitcoin Jesus, though I've heard you don't much really care for that particular terminology. It has stuck with you. And as a result, you've become hated by many people within the Bitcoin community. I mean, every Twitter post, I thought people didn't like me, but people really, really don't like you, Roger, because you stand for a change to the Bitcoin system that would increase.
Not a change as much as a return to what it was meant to be.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. But it's a change from
Mark.
What it is now.
I'm trying to go down the original path. That was outlined in the original white paper and was the game plan for Bitcoin from day one. And just recently, a bunch of people managed to gain control of the project and completely changed the future roadmap of Bitcoin. And they want to change it from a peer-to-peer cash system, as outlined by Satoshi Nakamoto. They want to change this into a settlement layer that costs $100 per transaction, which isn't interesting to me.
They're insane. That's what they want.
This new accord, the New York City consensus, or whatever they're calling a New York City accords, that came out.
This came out last Monday, last week.
Right. You and Bitcoin.com, you've signed off on it. But Blockstream, and thus, many of the core developers who, it sounds to me like, criminally wrested control of Bitcoin away from Gavin Andreessen. These folks have not signed on. Have you found in that 2 week period of time that some of the vitriol on the internet has settled down because people have come to realize that the other side has no intention of coming to the table, that the other side does not want to negotiate?
Maybe somewhere in some small corner of the internet it has, but for the most part, the internet's always filled with vitriol and hate.
Yeah, they're still going to be angry because
they would be in real life.
Well, because isn't this consensus? Now, let's get into talking about what happened last week. So doesn't this consensus basically mean Bitcoin is going to what's called hard fork? And if so, can you explain briefly for our audience that, is probably mostly completely uninitiated on these concepts, what that means?
So a hard fork is just a word that I feel like the other side in this debate is using to make things sound much scarier than they actually are. A hard fork is just a scary sounding word for a protocol upgrade. So right now, Bitcoin's blockchain is able to be, have 1 megabyte on average every 10 minutes added to that blockchain. So it can hold 1 megabyte worth of additional transactions. So this forthcoming protocol upgrade to Bitcoin is going to increase that from 1 megabyte every 10 minutes to 2 megabytes every 10 minutes. So when you hear about it that way, it doesn't sound nearly as scary. And that's all the arguments over. Whereas a number of other people want to figure out ways to include more transactions in each 1 megabyte of data. That's fine. I have no problem with that. I'm all for that. But you don't also have to restrict the actual amount of data as well. So like it's the year 2017. 2 megabytes every 10 minutes or even 10 megabytes every 10 minutes is not a big deal at this point.
And we had talked about this technology to supposedly increase the amount of transactions per kilobyte or whatever, and that's this segregated witness, which you have signed on to now at this point because that's part of this proposal. The proposal on the table, as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong because I'm just a noob here to a lot of this kind of level of detail on Bitcoin. The segregated witness would be implemented, and also a 2 megabyte increase would be implemented within 6 months.
Right. That's the agreement. And I signed on to it, not because I think that it's a great idea, but I think it's much, much, much better than the status quo that we have right now.
Absolutely.
Which is where Bitcoin is losing, you know, market share day after day to a million and one altcoins that have faster confirmations and lower fees and a better user experience. And there's, you know, wallets like Jack's wallet. That's, I think, the sponsor of your show.
Yep.
It's fantastic. It makes it so easy to switch from Bitcoin to Ethereum to Dash to whatever you want. There's, I don't know, a half dozen or a dozen different crypto coins in there. And I've been using Dash, the Jack's wallet, because it's that easy. And the fact of the matter is if Bitcoin doesn't provide users with the best possible user experience, people are going to switch to something else. They're going to switch to something else really, really quickly.
And that's the problem.
And that's happening right now before our eyes.
That's the problem here, is that time is of the essence. There's been a lot of time wasted arguing over this, you know, future course for Bitcoin. Finally, as of last Monday or whenever, we have a course. There's been a course charted. 80+%, so like 82-83% of the mining power behind Bitcoin were signatories to this charter. So big players are involved in signing this thing. You guys have 80+% of these, you know, big players. So the question I think that's most important is, how long realistically is this going to take? I mean, how come everybody didn't just go home that night and, you know, flip their miners to support SegWit and support Bitcoin Unlimited and, you know, the increased block size? And, why can't this happen in a week? Why does it have to take 6 months or up to 6 months? And what do you think a realistic estimate is?
There's just too many moving pieces here and too many players and too many different people with different visions. So I wish everybody could go home and flip the switch and it would be done in, 24 hours. We're not there yet. People are still arguing about it.
The people who signed the accord, 83% of the mining power in the world signed the accord.
Yeah, there's definitely some politicking when it comes to the way the whole thing's been presented. So a fair number of the people signed the agreement, you know, kicking and screaming and not too terribly happy. But everybody, I think, likes it better than where we're at today. So hopefully that means that it'll go forward, because everybody likes it better than where we're at today, which is nothing's happening and Bitcoin is losing market share quickly to all these altcoins. And then the argument that really is so frustrating for me that I hear from the other side, they said, oh, well, those people don't understand why Bitcoin is better than these other currencies and they'll come back to Bitcoin eventually. And I don't think that's the case. If another coin gives you a faster confirmation at a lower price and is easier to use, why would you go back to Bitcoin? Of course you're not.
I have a question, Roger. This is Johnny Ray, and I'm a bigger noob than Ian. But to go back a little bit, the terms segregated witness, settlement layer, and off-chain, are they related? Are they synonymous? What can you tell me what segregated witness means?
So segregated witness is another fancy way of just saying removing part of the data from the normal part of the block and putting it in this other area. So right now, all the Bitcoin transactions kind of go into one bucket, so to speak. And this is going to make a second bucket that's separate from the first bucket. And then one of the parts that I hate about it the most is that the developers behind Segregated Witness just completely arbitrarily, centrally planned, picked a fee discount for the Bitcoin, part of the Bitcoin transactions that go in this
new
bucket.
Hold that thought, Roger. We're going to continue here in moments with Roger Veer from Bitcoin.com.
Dash is digital cash, a digital currency designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low, and transactions are confirmed instantly. Pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime, for just pennies on the dollar. Dash is the first digital money that's governed by its users. Join Dash and help us build a better financial system for everyone. Find out more at dash.org. That's dash.org.
It's Free Talk Live, and you can join us right here, toll-free at 855-450-FREE. If you've got a question for Roger Veer from Bitcoin.com, he is with us. If you want to talk about something else, well, stand by. We will get to you. We'll open the phones up as we always do, coming up here in a little bit. But we're talking about a very important topic to many of us here on the show, and that is Bitcoin. And it should be an important topic to people out there listening. Even if you don't have any yet, Bitcoin is a really interesting thing. It's a phenomenon. It is the first in the world cryptocurrency, and it has, in just the last several months, added quite a bit of value it dropped down a little bit over the last few days, but still over $2,100 per Bitcoin as we speak right now. And just a few months ago or several months ago, it was around $1,000 per Bitcoin. A year ago, it was like $600 per Bitcoin. And it's just been interesting and, you know, enlightening and for many people enriching to watch this happen. So it's a worldwide phenomenon, and that's one of the reasons why we're reporting on it in great detail here, because what happens to Bitcoin is a very important thing. It is the world's leader in cryptocurrencies, although it's starting to lose its market dominance, having gone down from about 85% of the total market cap for all cryptocurrencies combined down to below 50%, where it's kind of hovering at the moment. And Roger Ver is with us from Bitcoin.com, and we were talking about some of those alternatives to Bitcoin that have been around forever. I mean, for many years, there have been other options that are essentially derivatives of most of them. There are some exceptions to it, like Monero. But there are, you know, a bunch of coins that have been created to compete with Bitcoin. And right now, other things like Dash are starting to look pretty good because the Bitcoin fees are crazy and the Dash fees are next to nothing, just like Bitcoin used to be. And we've been talking about Dash because they're a sponsor of Free Talk Live, which is something that a lot of the other coins don't have a business plan to do, to actually have a built-in marketing budget. So Dash seems to be a real smart option out there and you know, a solid competitor. Of course, like any cryptocurrency, it allows you to pay anyone anywhere in the world anytime for just pennies on the dollar. And Dash has the vision of being digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth, which is what Bitcoin used to do, but not so much anymore until they can fix the problems. Dash is decentralized, and it's run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. And anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. You can join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today, and you can find out more at Dash.org. Find out why there's a lot of momentum behind Dash right now. Go to Dash.org and check that out. Now, Roger, I saw you post on, I think it was your Twitter, not too long ago, that you had transferred somebody some money with Dash instead of Bitcoin, and you were really pleased because you didn't have to pay through the nose and in fees to do it.
Yeah, and was actually to another longtime Bitcoiner that I don't know if he wants to be public in regards to that, but it's a well-known Bitcoin figure, asked me to send him some Dash.
Yeah. Right. Look at how things have devolved in the the new money sphere, that we have to wonder, oh, well, what's it going to be like if we say we used this currency or that currency? You know, I mean, that's kind of pathetic. I mean, we're using the thing that, you know, in whatever circumstance serves us best. And Bitcoin needs to Bitcoin needs to get on the stick. And I'm really kind of sad and upset.
That makes two of us there, Mark. I'm incredibly sad and upset. Bitcoin had this giant first mover advantage,
yep,
had the biggest network effect, had the most users, had the most user adoption, had the most businesses interested in it. I'm aware of literally businesses that have over 100 million monthly active users that were in the process of integrating Bitcoin accounts into all of their user accounts and put that on hold because of this scaling debate and because Bitcoin hasn't been allowed to scale for social reasons, not for any technical reasons, but for social reasons. A bunch of people want to change Bitcoin into just being the settlement layer with a bunch of fancy technology on top. And they've blocked Bitcoin from being able to scale to keep up with user demand. And as someone who's one of the earliest people telling people about how wonderful Bitcoin is, it brings a tear to my eye to see this happening.
It hurts, and it makes it really hard to promote Bitcoin, although I continue to do so just because, honestly, I don't have any other options as far as locally. I mean, we promote Dash on the air, but as far as like payment systems are concerned for real life merchants, right now Bitcoin is pretty much all there is. Now, I know the Dashers are working on a solution, and hopefully they'll be coming out with that sooner rather than later, because I feel like we're stuck here. As you're aware, Roger, we've been doing a lot of Bitcoin outreach here in the Keene area and have, as a result, turned Keene into sort of this Bitcoin powerhouse where we have more Bitcoin accepting businesses per capita here in Keene than San Francisco does, which is supposedly the worldwide number one place. So, I mean, a little bit of effort has really reaped some rewards, even with Bitcoin as broken as it is right now. Now, Johnny Ray, you were asking a question. I don't think we ever got to the full response about some of the terminology, the settlement layer and segregated witness.
Yeah, to paraphrase my question, I had basically just asked for definitions of segregated witness, on-chain, off-chain, and settlement layer.
Yeah, so segregated witness is just a fancy term of like segregating the witness signatures that are part of a Bitcoin transaction to a different area. A more important question is on-chain versus off-chain. So a Bitcoin transaction is on-chain when you broadcast the Bitcoin network and it's recorded in a block. An example of an off-chain transaction would be if you have a Coinbase account and I have a Coinbase account and I send Bitcoins from my Coinbase account to your Coinbase account. And Coinbase just updates their internal ledger, and that never goes on the actual Bitcoin blockchain. And we're seeing a huge, huge, huge amount of Bitcoin transactions being moved into these off-chain systems that don't provide the same level of security. Coinbase could freeze either of our accounts at any time for any reason. We need to make as much room for people to make on-chain Bitcoin transactions as we possibly can. And I'm sorry,
that's what's full right now.
That's
what's full, though. The on-chain transactions, those blocks that they have to be included in, those blocks are 99.98, you know, plus percent full or whatever every single 10 minutes. And so it's hard to get your transactions in there. Mark, now, you...
Yeah, we were into alternative currencies here on Free Talk Live before we ever heard
gold,
about
silver,
Bitcoin.
Sure.
And the story I heard about how fractional reserve banking began was that goldsmiths would hold people's gold and give them little pieces of paper to say, you know, this is a 1 ounce, this is a certificate for, you know, a tenth of an ounce or 1 ounce or whatever of gold. And that people would do their transactions by handing the piece of paper over to someone else. And then the basically the piece of paper became worth a, an ounce of gold because you could go and get it from the goldsmith. What the goldsmiths found out was is they never had to actually have all the gold on hand because rarely would people come and get their gold. It was better taken care of by the smith. And so what they began doing was handing out more pieces of paper than they actually had gold for, or actually probably putting the gold to work, like loaning it out or whatever that they would do in order to get, you know, public work projects or whatever the thing was. And so when there was rumor that goldsmith didn't have the gold in the vault, then there would be a run on the bank, as it were. People would come and want their certificates cashed out, and the goldsmith wouldn't have it, and then, you know, I don't know, slavery or whatever the hell would happen. I mean, this is, you're talking about ancient Babylon here. So this is kind of the story. Essentially, off-chain transactions, like you described with Coinbase, doing transactions between two Coinbase accounts, that would enable an organization like Coinbase to essentially begin doing fractional reserve banking. And this is what I find so frightening about off-chain solutions is that in the Bitcoin network, you send actual Bitcoin, which is like sending actual gold. It's not a certificate for that. No one's holding it for you. You hold it, and then you give it to someone else who can hold it. If you let other people hold your currency, then, well,
get what you get.
Yeah, you're bringing us back into the dark ages of fractional reserve banking and state monetary policy. This is what we were drug out for. Satoshi Nakamoto gave us a lifeline for just a moment, and then these people that want these off-chain solutions seem to me like they're shoving us, putting their foot in my face and shoving me back into the mud.
Well, isn't it true that this Blockstream company that has sort of taken control over Bitcoin is funded by a big bank to the tune of like $100 million? There's more coming up here in moments. Roger, can you stick with us?
You got it.
It's Free Talk Live. We're launching here into more with your calls coming up about whatever you want. But right now, if you're going to call in, you do need to be having a question for Roger Veer from Bitcoin.com, where we're talking about the future of Bitcoin. Is it a bright future, or is this consensus that they came out with last week too little, too late? Is it too little to actually save Bitcoin from being overcome by its competition? You know, right now it is still, if you go to coincap.io, for instance, you can, you know, take a look and they'll show you, you know, what the market cap is of Bitcoin compared to the market caps of these other currencies. And the market cap is the current value based in U.S. dollars of all of the Bitcoin that exists in the world at this moment right now. It's currently at about $35.5 billion around the globe for Bitcoin. Its second closest competitor, or the next closest competitor, number two on the list, is Ethereum at $15.6 billion. So just under half of the value of Bitcoin right now. And Ethereum's doing great. I mean, it's growing strong and it's growing well. There's all kinds of interesting applications out there for Ethereum. And of course, below that, there's several other competitors, including Dash and Monero and Ethereum Classic and more. All told, the number of altcoins is actually the market capitalization of those altcoins, the sort of competitors to Bitcoin, in total is greater than Bitcoin itself. Bitcoin used to be at a dominance of 85% just a few months ago, and it's dropped now below 50% for the first time very recently. And we've got Roger Veer with us from Bitcoin.com.
Roger, do you think if the New York Accords, and it seems like the New York Accords are going to be implemented, I'm hoping, there was an accord like this previously out of Hong Kong, but it didn't have nearly the buy-in as far as miners go, and miners are the only ones that matter. When the New York Accords are implemented, that SegWit is adopted and 2 megabyte transaction sizes are raised to 2 megabytes, do you think that that's going to reverse a lot of the attrition that Bitcoin's experienced?
I really, really, really hope so. But
me
I'm
too.
Also really, really afraid that it may be too little too late at this point. Bitcoin still has the giant network effect over these other ones, but these other ones are coming up fast and strong. And during the commercial break, I heard the Dash commercial there, and they're advertising the exact right things they need to be advertising. They're advertising instant confirmations for low fees, and Bitcoin has the exact opposite. The average confirmation time is multiple hours, and the fees are really, really high. And the current, you know, quote unquote core devs are saying that that's a good thing. Those people are nuts. People are going to use the currencies to give them fast, safe confirmations for a low price. That's what people want, and that's what people are going to use. And we're seeing that happen. And you mentioned that Bitcoin's share of the overall market cap of the crypto coin space has plummeted from around 85% to less than half in just the last couple of months. That's timed exactly with when the time that the Bitcoin fees really got out of control and the confirmation times became really, really long. That's not a coincidence. That's the reason why.
Absolutely. So it's pretty scary, you know, what's going to happen with Bitcoin. But cryptocurrency is going to continue on. Whether or not it is Bitcoin that is on the top, that's really the only question.
Right. And I think that that's one of the conspiracy theories that's out there. And I want to ask Roger that particular question. Many people I've heard say that Roger, if he has any Bitcoin at all left, wants to see Bitcoin run into the ground and, you know, things like this. Now, you know, I mean,
That's the most ridiculous conspiracy theory besides the flat Earth, I think.
But I wouldn't take the time on Facebook to address that with some troll that is just throwing crap up in order to say
waste
things.
Your time.
But I know that people might have that conspiracy theory after they hear the way we're talking here. I've heard a lot of people say that essentially you back Bitcoin or you hate cryptocurrency. Right, like that's where they're coming from. And so, Roger, are you holding Bitcoin? I mean, do you have Bitcoin?
Yeah, I'm holding a huge amount of Bitcoin. About 9 months or so ago, I sold about 1% of my Bitcoin, and I bought some Dash, I bought some Monero, I bought some Zcash, I bought a number of different currencies there. And in hindsight, I probably should have sold more of my Bitcoin at that time. Bitcoin's up maybe around 4 times, 5 times in price since I sold 1% of my Bitcoin holdings. All these other currencies are up dozens of times in that same time period. So it's sad, but the reason why is the honest truth is if you want to make a transaction to somebody who already has a Dash wallet and a Bitcoin wallet, the Dash transaction is going to go through much faster and much cheaper and going to provide a better user experience, say, than Bitcoin. The only difference is Bitcoin has way more users and way more merchants and way more adoption at the moment. But if the user experience continues to be bad, that's going to change, and we're going to see more and more people using things other than Bitcoin.
The momentum that Bitcoin has and has earned, rightfully, over many years, is starting to slow down. And so that's why, you know, the big question is, how soon can they implement these changes? Now, we've been looking at a website called coin.dance, coin.dance/blocks, and we've been kind of just, you know, taking a look at that from time to time to see where some of these proposals are, and they just seem like they're stalled, at least according to the numbers there. Is that still the best place to look, Roger, to kind of keep an eye on how this is developing from a numbers perspective? How many people are on board? How many of the miners specifically are coming on board with these ideas to change Bitcoin?
Yeah, coin.dance is one of my favorites, and another one that I love is nodecounter.com. Okay. is another great one that I like.
Because right now it doesn't look like, you know, it's been about a week now. I think it was Monday of last week that this consensus was reached with over 80% of the miners, and there hasn't really been much of a change on this particular website. So it's looking more like it's going to be closer to more of the 6 months rather than fewer of them. And you said you don't have any idea how quickly this can be implemented, but the agreement was at the most it would be 6 months. It's hard to watch because you know that every moment that goes by, every day that goes by that they don't implement this, more people are going to drop off the radar. What is it going to look like when they finally do? So let's fast forward, you know, 5 months, and the segregated witness thing finally gets to the level it needs to. The emergent consensus, the increase to the block size gets to the level that it needs to, and they go through this hard fork. Does that mean that there are going to be two Bitcoins?
It's possible, but it seems very, very, very unlikely.
Why?
In my book. So Monero, for example, has had dozens of hard forks. It's never resulted in there being two versions of Monero. And with Bitcoin, unlike Ethereum, which is another competitor to Bitcoin here, the difficulty adjusts every 2016 blocks, which means if you have one group that wants to go one way and another group wants to go another way, the miners on the minority chain there aren't very likely to get paid. Because their blocks are going to be spaced so far apart. You have to wait. You have to have 100 blocks built on top of the block. And maybe this is getting too technical for the radio, yeah. But the short version is that I think it's very, very unlikely. And even if it does result in Bitcoin splitting and there's two different versions of Bitcoin compared to where we're at today, that's a fantastic thing.
Right.
Everybody gets the version of Bitcoin that they want, and they can go on their merry way, and all the fighting can end. And
let
then the
market
decide which version of Bitcoin is better and more useful for people around the world. And there's no doubt in my mind that people are going to prefer the version of Bitcoin that gives them fast, safe, cheap, and reliable Bitcoin transactions than the one that's costs $100 per transaction.
Right.
And you have no idea when your transaction is going to get confirmed in a block. There's no doubt in my mind which version is going to be adopted.
Yeah, I mean, it really can't happen soon enough. But
right. It's the people, the small blockers, the people that want to keep Bitcoin the way it is, really have to act like the government, because they have to push their opinion down other people's throats. They can't allow people to have more options, because every option's better than their option.
Okay, so here's what I want to know, though. If this hard fork happens, and whether there's two Bitcoins or not, this new Bitcoin, you know, the new Bitcoin that supposedly will adhere to the old Bitcoin's ways of Satoshi Nakamoto and all that, the one that you're backing here with the increased block size, will the current programmers who are currently a threat, according to you, to Bitcoin, will they still be in charge of this new one? If not, who will? As far as like who will be the programmers of this new direction?
So there's a number of competing dev teams to the current, and they're called Bitcoin Core, but that's not really an accurate term. They're not any more core to Bitcoin than anybody else. But there's a number of competing dev teams. One is called Bitcoin Unlimited. Another is called Bitcoin. There's another one with Jeff Garzik and Sergio Lerner that are working on one. So all of these groups have different and better vision for the future of Bitcoin than the current Blockstream and Bitcoin Core group. So I'll gladly support anybody that thinks that Bitcoin, in order for people to want to use it, needs to have fast, safe confirmations and low fees. And the Bitcoin Core team is advocating for the exact opposite. So I don't support the Bitcoin Core team. I've been funding a number of different competing dev teams with money out of my own pocket with my own Bitcoin.
But how does a winner get picked out of all those dev teams? Is it the miners that kind of vote for them?
Yeah, the reason the answer to that question isn't clear is because there isn't really a clear answer. It's the miners have to vote, the businesses have to vote, the wallets have to vote. It's everybody together.
Oh, we're going to be watching, and it'll be fascinating. Roger, thanks for being with us tonight from Bitcoin.com. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
More coming up. You can join us here on Free Talk Live.
North to Port is a liberty-inspired fiction podcast about a band on tour. Each episode chronicles the band's adventures in the form of a radio interview at a tour stop location. Listen as North to Port explores liberty themes in friendly ways, with humor and music. To listen to the podcast and the accompanying album, please visit northtoport.com. That's NORTHTOPORT.com. Or just search North to Port in your favorite podcatcher.
It's Free Talk Live, and you can take control of the airwaves. All you have to do is dial in toll-free and join us here at 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, so feel free to Skype on in here at username lrn.fm. And with you in the studio tonight, it's Ian,
Johnny Ray,
and Mark.
We talked a lot in the first hour about the future of Bitcoin, and it is a questionable future. We want to hope the best for it, but at the same time, you might be wise to prepare for the worst. The price is doing pretty great, but the fees are crazy. And will this new consensus from last week be implemented soon enough to save Bitcoin's market dominant position?
I think
we don't know.
I think the answer to that is yes, that absolutely they can do that. I know you're demoralized, Ian.
It's been hard. This has been tough.
Yeah. Well, you work every day in helping people to do transactions in Bitcoin, and to have a customer have to spend $2 in order to do a Bitcoin transaction means that hamburgers, hot dogs, and milkshakes are out of the running
for the most part.
Haircuts and all, a whole variety of things. Now, I did a Bitcoin transaction. I did some. I did a cryptocurrency transaction and avoided some Bitcoin fees at one point, relatively recently, with a local business. And I think that Bitcoin can reclaim its status if it acts relatively quickly.
Yeah.
It has 6 months. It has less than six months. It's supposed to be pretty immediate for this segregated witness implementation, which
is it?
Should
it's, right now they're at 30%.
It's supposed to be relatively immediately, right? And there's going to be some people working on holding people to their word. 83% or 82% of
the mining power
in the world has signed up to do this.
Right.
So yes, I think it's going to happen. I really hope it's going to happen. I'm going to hang on. I'm going to operate as though this Bitcoin
but
has
even
been
you
saved.
Exchanged some of your Bitcoin into other cryptocurrencies.
I'm not dumb, Ian. You don't. you see, that's how you think, right? Like all in, baby. And it's not that.
No,
way.
Not all in. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket.
What baskets are your eggs in?
Well, I've got some gold, some silver, some Bitcoin, and a little bit of the other cryptos.
You
but the thing
little...
is, you can't pick a winner on these other ones. I mean, I like Dash, but I don't know if Dash is going to be, Bitcoin's successor. I don't know if it's going to be Ethereum. Ethereum seems to have been a pretty strong number two for a while now, but those number two through 10 change.
Yeah, Ethereum is not a currency. It's a platform, and Dash is intended to be a currency.
That's true.
Supposed to be significantly easier than Bitcoin ever has.
Yep.
It's got a community, and it's got a structure that Bitcoin's never had, and those are the things that have sold me on it.
I know. That's why I have some Dash.
Yep.
But I just went to the Google Play Store and got the Jax wallet because of this – discussion we just had with Roger Veer decided me and Mark, what I heard you say, a good rule of thumb, if you're a Bitcoin owner, you're likely to be able to duplicate the nominal amount of Bitcoins with another coin, and then regardless of which one wins, you're sort of in the same position.
Right. You can take a relatively small amount, just a percentage of your Bitcoin amount. So say you have, 15 Bitcoin or something like that. You can take 5 of those Bitcoin and get 10 in pretty much everything else out there. And you're still staying, the majority of your wealth would remain in Bitcoin, but then you would have these other things as a hedge, because something's going to take over. And if Bitcoin... if Blockstream manages to scuttle Bitcoin, which is apparently what they want to do, I mean, that's what it looks like, then, that's it.
Now, you say Ethereum is a platform, not a currency. Can I still...
It has a currency. It's called Ether.
Okay, so I can get Ether on that Jax wallet and Dash.
Yes, yep.
Excellent.
You absolutely can. So, and you can get Jax over at JAXX.io. Let's go to you with your calls and thoughts. Then coming up, you said the other day or today, Johnny Ray, 5 weeks behind
at least on
our next chapter here of Economics in One Lesson, the book that we've been just slowly climbing through over the last 6 months or some more, maybe more.
I wanted to encourage America to read, Ian, and you too.
We've been very bad.
You've discouraged the country.
Well, it's not that I haven't read the chapter. It's just that we haven't gotten around to talking about the chapter yet. And let's go to Pan. He is on the line on Skype. Pan, you're on Free Talk Live. Where are you calling from tonight?
Hi.
We're hearing ourselves back. I apologize, Pan. I don't know if there's some sort of speaker on in the background, but...
I'm hearing an echo of your speech.
Oh, it's very strange. All right. Well, you're on the air. We can hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm calling to talk about our friend Morpheus and his plight.
Gotcha. Tell you what, it sounds like there is a problem with the talkback continuing to you, and that's going to be a little bit distracting. So we're going to see if we can put you on hold, or maybe we'll have you call in on our regular toll-free lines.
You could just call back one time and see how that works.
Probably is not going to solve that, but you might want to just call the regular toll-free number at 855-450-FREE with just your regular phone. Thank you for the call tonight, Pan. Sorry for that frustration. Let's go to, in the meantime, a different caller on Skype. We've got Stefan in Ohio. Stefan, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, you can hear Stefan's not having the same problem, so it's definitely not our issue. Go ahead, Stefan.
I was thinking today a lot about the necessity of public schools. I actually went to my commencement today, and I started to think to myself, how does this piece of paper help me in any way?
Won't.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say it won't. So if you want to go to community college and learn, some trade or something like that, something you can do, community college might be a way to do that. So if you want to go the college route, likely you're going to be a college professor, a lawyer, a doctor, perhaps an engineer. These kind of things are a good way to, college.
You're going to need more than community college for those things.
Right, but it's a way to get started.
Yeah.
Second,
and you would need a diploma for that is what you're saying.
Right, and you may need a diploma just to get into a vocational school. It's not entirely out of the question that that's the case, depending on your age. So a diploma has some value, but
I can tell you I've never
had
to use it
for mine.
Yeah. I mean besides going to community college, which I regret. I wish I could have that time back. Since getting out of the whole school system, I have had no use whatsoever for the diploma. What about you, Johnny Ray?
No, my experience basically is just the same as you guys's.
Yeah.
I went to a community college and, I needed to get my transcripts and my diploma for that. Unfortunately, I was not as successful. I was as successful a community college student as I had been a high school student, and I flunked out of community college.
Mm. So there you go, Stefan.
Sorry. What I was going to say is the main purpose of the question was, what necessity really is there for a public school at this point, considering the wide amounts of information we have in today's day and age?
Public schools are out of date. I mean, we have no use whatsoever for these, decrepit old institutions. The only reason they are with us still is because we're forced to have them by the threat of violence. I mean, the government will steal your home from you if you don't pay property taxes, which is mostly what goes to fund the government schools in most places. So that's the reason why they exist. I mean, would they exist if they actually had to compete in a marketplace? I don't know. Maybe because they have sort of, you know, that institutional staying power because they've been around for so long and people think that they need them. But if they were actually subject to open market competition, I think other schooling methods would eat their lunch and do it relatively quickly.
Yeah, I believe that as well. But you ever think that maybe most parents don't send their kids to private schools is simply because they have that free option?
Yeah,
sure.
I think that the reason parents don't is because they're paying already for the public schools. They think that, well, the schooling's pretty good there, and you know what more am I going to get for my money by paying for the public school and then paying for the private school?
Right.
And the answer is you'll probably get a marginally better education for your child, but the public school is, you know, when it comes to these regular schools, it's, you know, in many cases, it's not the worst option in the world.
But it's also a terrible option compared to what we could actually have as far as free market and education. Stefan, thanks for the call. Our toll-free number tonight is 855-450-FREE. If you want to join us, 855-450-3733. It's Free Talk Live. Live Sunday edition of the show. You can dial in toll-free and join us here. We've got Economics in One Lesson coming up. When we get a chance, the 16th chapter, I believe, is what we are on, and it is
government price fixing.
Yeah, more price control action. We will talk about that coming up here, and of course, your calls and thoughts are welcome, where you can share your thoughts about anything you want to discuss with you in the studio tonight. It's Ian.
Johnny Ray.
And Mark.
Also, Mark, tell me about what's going on with Hope. freetalklive.com. That is a charitable effort that you've been heading up here, some fundraising for. You've teamed up with Jax.io, the wallet that Johnny Ray was just talking about a moment ago, as well as Cell 411 for matching funds to help an orphanage.
That's right, an orphanage that we're organizing the building of in Jinja, Uganda. And at this point, what I've been doing is I've been doling out the money in little, you know, smaller bits. I'm not going to just give them, here's the money for an orphanage, build an orphanage. Mm-hmm. I want to see, you know, progress as steps are taken. And as I raise money, it's like I didn't raise all the money at once either.
Right. It's ongoing.
Yeah. Basically, we're at the end of the last amount. The supplies have been purchased and the walls are going up. And basically, we've got a two-story building without a roof at this point. The columns are in. It looks great. They've done a wonderful job building this. And this is an orphanage that's going to last them for generations there in Jinja, Uganda. But we need to get the roof on. Like I said, it's rainy season in Uganda, and that these bricks that they use are handmade, and they deteriorate to some extent in the water. Now, they're in better shape being in walls surrounded by mortar, but they still need a roof to keep them keep any kind of deterioration from happening. So right now, folks, this is when I need them, and we need the money to get this going. Your dollars will be matched, basically 2-to-1 for your dollars. So one from Jax.io, one from cell411.com, and well, that. What else do you need to know? There's kids that don't have a place to sleep in Uganda. Your kids are doing fine and they're healthy. These kids, they're lucky to get a used pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. And that's why I got involved in this, is because it's not that I think anyone deserves anything, but it makes my heart sad to think that there's kids out there that they've got no parents. And their big joy is to have a meal that includes meat and to get some used shoes. These are the things I've seen over the course of 8 months that I've been working with Ndofuna Johnson out there trying to get this done. So please go to hope.freetalklive.com. I've got several different ways you can donate there. It's hope.freetalklive.com. And, you know, give as though you live in the, one of the wealthiest places on earth, and that you want to help somebody who hasn't got crap. And we've been getting donations from $5 on up to, you know, very good sized donations, $500, $1,000, things like that.
And they'll be tripled.
And those will be tripled now. Yeah. The ones, the $500 and the $1,000 donations were back before the tripling occurred.
Okay.
So now, you know, these things are going to have a lot more power.
Right.
But I needed to do the announcements and those sorts of things previously. You know, I didn't know that GetCell401 and Jax.io were going to be interested in matching these funds.
No, they heard you talking about it.
And they wanted to match the funds. And they want to show and they want to see that other people think that it's a good idea, too. So please go to hope.freetalklive.com and show them that you think it is, too.
All right. Let's go to Skype where Bob is on the line in Acapulco, Mexico. Hello, Bob.
Hi. How you doing?
Hey, great. What's on your mind tonight?
Tell me first, am I on camera?
Well, we're doing radio, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
So, no, we're not seeing
you. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I knew what was happening.
Okay.
So I'm here tonight to talk with you about Morpheus, my friend Morpheus.
This and is the guy, not the movie character, but the guy who was arrested recently, as of several weeks ago maybe, in Phoenix, Arizona, allegedly for doing Bitcoin trading.
Well, that's not what they the excuse was initially. I mean, here's what I know about the series of events from someone in that area, so someone who's still living there and is very familiar with what went on. As you may know, Morpheus uses local bitcoins to let people know where they can buy and sell bitcoins, and he's been doing this for a couple of years. He has a very good reputation. I've known him since 2005. He's a very, very honest, simple, straightforward man who loves his freedom.
Yep.
And because of that, there have been all kinds of cops harassing him and in various ways ever since I've known him. Mm. He's just such an easy target because he's so free. Wow. Anyway, so he's been making a living buying and selling bitcoins. And he has a policy that he will not buy or sell to someone who is known to him to be involved in some kind of illegal operation, like a drug dealer. He will not. If it's someone says, "Oh, I'm trying to launder my drug money," he'll literally stand up, turn around, and walk away.
I would presume that person is an undercover police officer if they decide to share that kind of information,
or just a dumbass.
Well, that's another possibility, but you could be repeating yourself.
Well, there was a guy in Florida 6 months ago, roughly, who was arrested because he sold bitcoins through local bitcoins. He met with someone and sold them bitcoins after they told him that they were making their money illegally.
Right.
Now, I have predicted for a long time that this was going to happen, but basically, I know from you know, Morpheus and I have been really good friends for a really long time. And I know that he wouldn't make a deal with someone he knew was making the money illegally because it would make him vulnerable. And in fact, since he was arrested back on April the 20th, there have been two more cases come to my awareness, one in Louisiana and one in Michigan, of other people who found customers for bitcoins through local bitcoins who have been arrested.
Yes, I've seen now, some of these stories as well. And they haven't included the same allegations, as you mentioned, with that Florida case. Maybe, you know, there are some facts in that case that we're not aware of because we're just getting the most basic of overviews from the news media that's reporting on them. But none of those other cases have cited, oh, this person was selling to a known drug user or drug dealer or something like that. They're not saying that.
Well, he was charged, I believe, with money laundering.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, in order to be a money launderer, others are being charged with illegal money transmitters.
Right.
They're unlicensed money transmitters.
Which is a legal term, and the definition is somewhat nebulous. But, generally, a money transmitter is usually considered someone like a Western Union who accepts money from one person to then transmit that money to another person, which is not what you're doing on local bitcoins.
No.
Hang on, Bob. I'm sure you got more to say about this, and maybe you know the latest in the Morpheus case, whether he's still in jail and all that. Can you stick with us, Bob?
Sure. All right, I'll
we're
stick with
Bob. He's in Acapulco, Mexico. Beautiful place to be. We had the pleasure of going down there for an Acapulco earlier this year. Mark and I did. 855-450-FREE is our toll-free number, 855-450-3733. You can join us here. This is Free Talk Live.
Bitcoin.com is the most unique online destination in the Bitcoin universe. Buying Bitcoin? Do it here. Want to speak your mind to other Bitcoin users? Our forum is always open and censorship free at forum.bitcoin.com. There's no bigger Bitcoin believers than the Bitcoin.com team. That's why this site is a one-stop shop for everything you need to get into Bitcoin life. You can also play games at games.bitcoin.com. Learn more at bitcoin.com. That's bitcoin.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You may dial toll free and join us on the radio waves here, the live Sunday edition of Free Talk Live. Been a crypto-centric, crypto-focused show here tonight, talking about the future of Bitcoin a lot in the first hour. If you missed our interview with Roger Ver from Bitcoin.com, you can always grab it later on tonight over at freetalklive.com when the archives go up for you for free.
We all know that we need vitamins and minerals to stay healthy, but there are three other classes of nutrients that are essential for maintaining health. In fact, when it comes to supplements, some experts feel that these other three nutrients are needed more than vitamins and minerals. The other three nutrients are probiotics, enzymes, and antioxidants. And the reason that they're so important is that the modern American diet has virtually eliminated regular sources of these nutrients from our meals. If it's absolutely the truth. The problem is that as many people turn to supplements to supply these five essential nutrients, they find that they're all sold separately, and it's expensive and time-consuming to get them all. But one product, Whole Food Multicomplete, has simplified the situation. Whole Food Multicomplete combines these five critical nutrients, along with the additional immune and bone support nutrients, into a single product. In fact, for the past 15 years, Whole Food Multicomplete is the only product to offer this. So instead of spending a fortune buying five different products every month, check out the full supplement program offered by Whole Food Multicomplete. With 54 total ingredients, it's guaranteed to be the cheapest way to acquire all these nutrients, and it also comes with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Hear that? 100%. 30% off with the coupon code FTL on your first order. If you get more than $60 worth, shipping's free. It's basically a cost for them. But go ahead on over there and order now. SimplifyMySupplements.com and use coupon code FTL.
All right, let's go back to Bob in Acapulco, Mexico. He's on via Skype updating us on the latest on the Morpheus arrest. And we're talking about Morpheus, who is not a character in The Matrix, but perhaps named after that character. This Morpheus is an activist in the Phoenix, Arizona area who actually is connected with our friend Ernest Hancock over at Freedom's Phoenix. We talk about Freedom's Phoenix from time to time here on Free Talk Live, great libertarian news site. Morpheus was one of the technical admins who was behind the scenes on that site. So I didn't know him personally, but he was fairly close to us, you know, just because we know people who know him. And of course, you know him well, Bob. So what's the latest on his case? They arrested him for operating a illegal money services business or something like that.
We don't know that.
We don't know that. Okay.
We can surmise that. But here's what happened. He was doing business with a customer and went to meet them at a restaurant and arrived for the appointment and was arrested. Hmm. Now, I don't know if he was arrested before or after selling or buying some Bitcoins with that customer, but he was arrested. And then after he was arrested, and we still don't know the probable cause behind that arrest, but after that, federal SWAT team raided his apartment. Okay?
Wow.
Ripped it to hell. Someone that I know that knows Morpheus went over and was on the parking lot talking with some of the officials there and picked up that the feds had been monitoring his telephone for some time. And of course, he was well known on local Bitcoins. And it seems that local Bitcoins has become the target, that people who who do the most business and have the best reputation on local Bitcoins are being targeted in Florida, in Arizona, in Michigan, in Louisiana, and I'm betting pretty much soon everywhere. Because I predicted 2 years ago when I wrote an article on this subject called Bitcoin, the New Free Market. I wrote this and posted it on titanians.org. In that article, I predicted that eventually the U.S. government, with the cooperation of other governments, would attempt to make dealing in bitcoins illegal. And that meant that, of course, the anyone who wasn't licensed as a money transmitter, watch out. You want to privately buy or sell bitcoins. Now, understand, we're talking about buying and selling long strings of alphanumeric characters.
This is basically like buying and selling free speech. I mean, you're buying a thing that exists that is on the internet, a thing of text, or as you pointed out, a string of characters. You're essentially buying and reselling those things.
Right.
And actually, you're right. I just pulled up the federal PACER system. That's the court case system for the federal government, PACER.gov. And I had forgotten that detail about this case is they've charged him with felon in possession of ammunition or a firearm, operating an unlicensed money transmitter or unlicensed money services business.
They didn't find the ammunition. They didn't find the ammunition until they got to his apartment long after they arrested him.
Right. They were searching for evidence that they might use in the future. So they had a warrant to look for evidence about operating an unlicensed money services business. And
something like that.
So presumably that investigation is continuing while they then apparently allegedly found some ammunition or firearms and have charged him with felon in possession.
A handful of ammunition, no guns. Okay? There were no guns in the house, just a handful of ammunition that he probably had forgotten he even had.
But here's the thing about this is that, okay, so money transmitter generally means buying or accepting money from person A to give to person B. That's what a Western Union or some other company like that would do. Then there's also this more nebulous term, money services business. So somebody who cashes a check, for instance, as a business, would be a money services business. There's a bunch of different things that that define a money services business. And one of those things, from what I've seen, is exchanging currencies. So if you are a currency exchanger and you do that as a business, then that makes you a money services business. This is my understanding. I'm not an attorney of what the statutes or the criminal code or whatever the U.S. code it's called says. And the thing about it is, according to what I understood from this, the definition of a currency exchanger is somebody who exchanges the currencies of other countries. So Bitcoin is not a national currency. It is, as you pointed out, technology. It is a digital product, basically, that is, in my opinion, should not qualify for that. What do you think, Bob?
As a matter of fact, the U.S. government has waffled back and forth all along for years now on whether Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency is money. And generally, it's not treated as money in law.
Yeah, it depends on who you ask.
Right. The thing is the government loves they're going to call it a commodity when it's convenient for them to call it a commodity, and they're going to call it money when it's convenient for them to call it money because they can do that. And then they go into your house looking for more information on it, find the
take
fact
all
that
your stuff.
Some ex-roommate left some ammunition hidden in some spot, a handful of ammunition, and then they charge you with felon in possession of a firearm.
Right.
It's insane.
Yes. The whole system is insane. I totally agree with that.
And Bob, regarding the article you wrote and the predictions you made, and hearkening back to our discussion with Roger Ver, one can only assume that a segregated witness settlement layer and bundling transactions together, Bitcoin transactions, that is, and having them controlled by a relatively small group of exchanges and so forth, is going to make the whole Bitcoin system more vulnerable to governments around the world. Because, when it's just you and Mark, like you were saying, when it's every individual citizen holding their gold coins, trading the gold coins amongst each other, then it's infinitely almost more difficult for a state to control you. But when you've got all the goldsmiths controlling, centralizing the transactions, then it becomes a lot easier.
Well, I like to think of what Morpheus was doing as being like an itinerant silversmith who buys silver in the raw, adds value to it by altering it in some way, and then sells it at a profit.
Yeah, I think he's doing the right thing. He's helping connect people with Bitcoin. And Bob, would you do us a favor and keep us in the loop as this case continues to develop? It sounds like you're fairly close to the source, and we'd love to continue getting updates from you.
Before you let me go, let me do one more thing with you here. I am soliciting donations for Morpheus's defense.
Okay, tell us about that in a moment. We're going to continue more with Bob. Your calls and thoughts are welcome here on Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. It's the live Sunday edition of the program. As always, you can bring up whatever you want. We're talking about Morpheus, the real-life Morpheus, this one from Phoenix, Arizona, who was arrested just over a month ago in an investigation surrounding his business, supposedly, with Local Bitcoins, a website that allows people to connect with one another to buy or sell Bitcoins. The more traditional way to purchase Bitcoins is to go through some sort of centralized exchange where you have to give up a lot of personal information in order for them to, you know who they're dealing with or whatever. And Local Bitcoins, you're just dealing with another human being. And there is a centralization factor in that you're on this website called Local Bitcoins. But ultimately, it's the buyers and the sellers who come to the agreement on what sort of terms they have and what kind of identification they'll require, for instance. So they've come after this guy, Morpheus. They raided his home. They raided his business, as I understand it. They took a bunch of his stuff. They arrested him after they discovered that he allegedly possessed some ammunition. He's now facing up to a 10-year sentence in federal prison because of that. And we've got Bob on the line with us calling from Acapulco, Mexico. Morpheus has yet to be charged with anything in relation to the Bitcoins. But they presumably are doing that investigation as time goes on. And as we've seen, they do tend to take their sweet time with some of these investigations. Meanwhile, he is facing what sounds like another felony charge. It's not clear to me. I mean, if you're going to get 10 years, it's probably another felony for possession, the alleged possession of the ammunition. And that trial is slated for early June. So that's at least the latest according to
Pacer. Has changed.
Okay,
that
go ahead.
That has changed.
Yeah.
And the reason it's changed, we are told, is because they are putting some other charges together.
Oh, boy.
They decided that it would take them another 60 days. So now his court date is in August, and he's cooling his heels in a federal facility some 90 minutes outside of Phoenix.
Yeah, you're right. I see that here, August 1st.
Have they offered bail?
No, they won't let him bail.
Wow.
They say he's a flight risk, but I know for a fact that he's not. He's got lots of family and lots of friends in that area.
What's the evidence that he's a flight risk?
I have no idea.
They said so.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I wasn't there. I'm down here in Acapulco hearing about this all secondhand.
Right.
But I'm getting out there publicly because I see this as a point at which it's necessary to draw a line in the sand. If we don't defend him adequately, mm-hmm. the whole Bitcoin private transaction business is going to come under fire. And if they're not, you know, when they're through with him, they'll be coming after us.
Yeah, absolutely. And these other guys that have been arrested have taken plea deals. So far, it doesn't really seem like anybody has actually fought the feds on this, which, of course, is hard to ask anyone to do, considering that, you know, when you fight the feds, you know, if you actually stand up for yourself and they win, they then hit you with the hardest sentence possible in most cases. And so most people have the incentive to just go ahead and take the plea deal, even if they don't believe that they were liable under these money transmitter laws or money services businesses laws.
Here's the thing that I can't forget, and that is that Morpheus has not ever committed, at least since I've known him, he's never committed a crime. What he was doing, whether it's owning ammunition or selling or buying Bitcoins, there's no victim.
Right.
Without a victim, there's no crime. And if they accuse him of a crime, it's what they're doing that's fraudulent, and they're going to keep doing it unless someone draws a line in the sand. And I'm raising money to try to mount a defense. There are some good lawyers who would be willing to do it, but it's going to cost a lot.
Now, have you talked to him about this? Is that what he wants?
Well, I haven't been able to talk to him right. since he was arrested, right. but I've talked to people close to him, and I'm quite sure that if he were given a choice, would you like people to raise money and come to your defense, or would you not? I'm sure he'd rather be defended.
Sure, but that the question is, I don't want to jump to a conclusion unless I know exactly what the activist wants. Some people mm-hmm. do want to just take the plea deal, in which case, you're just paying for an attorney to hold his hand through a plea deal.
I don't think that he's going to take a plea deal.
Okay,
he's never backed down from these thugs with black gowns in the past. And, he's always been squashed because they're the ones with the guns and, yep. And the clubs and the tasers and all that crap. And I've actually witnessed him being handcuffed, beaten, tased, and hauled away to a cage for having not done anything except to mouth off a bit. Because he was unhappy with the way he was being treated.
How does one contribute to this fundraiser, Bob?
Okay. On the website, titanians.org, titanians.org, there is my most recent post. It's called My Friend Morpheus. Mm-hmm. And on that post, there is a link or an address, I should say, for a PayPal contribution. And there's also a Bitcoin address. And I'm accepting both, and I'll see that they get where they're most needed.
Thank you for doing what you're doing with this fundraising and making people aware of his case, because I agree with you. This is an important case. I would say it's right up there with Ross Ulbricht, especially if they charge Morpheus with these money transmitter related so-called crimes.
Which I have no doubt they're going to. And my expectation is that the so-called customer was someone who accepted a plea deal after they arrested him for doing drugs or something. And he accepted a plea deal which involved doing the sting on Morpheus.
Could be. Sometimes the customers are just direct undercover cops, and they will set up the person on more than one occasion. If you look at the documents in the other cases, you'll see that.
Either way.
Yeah, you'll see that.
Either way, it's a case of entrapment.
Yeah.
And he's doing something perfectly legal, and they're making a case against him for it.
Yeah, it's a disturbing story, especially considering they've gotten away with it so far in a few other occasions.
I'm surprised it's even legal to use the ammunition as a charge when they haven't brought him anything against him for the Bitcoin stuff.
That's right. Exactly.
You could
so.
Argue it's fruit of the poison tree.
That's right. I have yet, I heard that there's a probable cause against him for having ammunition, but I have yet to hear there was probable cause for the initial arrest.
Yeah.
And without that probable cause, all of the evidence that came afterward has to be inadmissible in court.
And I wonder I wonder if there's an aspect to this where a felon knowingly possesses
it's knowingly in this statute, yeah.
Yeah, so knowingly possesses, and that's going to be difficult to say if Morpheus has had a roommate
He had a roommate.
Right.
The roommate left in November, came down here.
Right. So I mean, all you have to do is have a situation where he says, it looks like the roommate left some of his ammunition. I didn't know it was there. Now prove I did.
Right.
That's a pretty tough thing to prove.
It's a very weak case they're trying to make against him.
Well, that's what the feds do. They'll beat you up. They don't go to trial. They don't want trials. They lose at trials. They want they just want to keep you in jail till you give up and make a plea bargain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done over and over again. The criminal justice system in America, and I mean on the local, state, and federal level, is so messed up that there's nothing that even resembles justice anymore. People that want to see more people in prison don't have any clue what they're talking about.
Right.
Bob, anything else you want to share about this tonight?
Well, I'm grateful to you guys for having me on and letting me sound off about this situation. I am very, very, very perturbed, even though I predicted this 2 years ago. You go find my article on titanians.org about the new Bitcoin, the new free market, And I say very explicitly, they're going to try to make it illegal eventually because they cannot tolerate the growth of it as it's now going. They're noticing,
it's going to take power. It is taking power out of their hands, and they certainly can't stand for that without a fight.
I think that what they're doing here is they're trying to make sure that everybody uses the sort of legit and above board exchanges where they basically can track who buys what bitcoins. Hey, that's what their concern is.
I'll go beyond that and say if they get their way, they will create a world in which it is impossible for anyone to communicate value from one person to another without their getting a piece of it.
Yeah, that's what they want.
That's what I think is going on. That's what it's all about. They don't have,
good point.
For example, they don't have a moral case against drug trafficking, but they don't like competition. Friggin' government.
You nailed it, Bob. Thanks for the call tonight from down there in beautiful Acapulco, Mexico. Appreciate hearing you. And please keep us in the loop as this develops. That's Bob there in Acapulco. And you can join us here toll-free at 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Hour number three is coming up. This is Free Talk Live.
A funny thing happens when you don't advertise. Nothing. Modern advertisers have been trained to look for trackability in their advertising, and web search ads are great for that. They also help you get the consumer that's looking for products like yours in the moment. But they're expensive, and they do nothing to convince people to try your product segment in the first place. They help you get a bigger piece of the pie, but branding mediums like radio grow the pie itself. Free Talk Live's on more than 150 stations, and we can help advertisers with little budgets and big ones. Send me an email, mark@freetalklive.com. It's mark@freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live, and we're launching into the third hour of the live Sunday edition of the program. As always, you can join us here toll-free and bring up anything that's on your mind. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. Tonight with you in the studio, it's Ian.
Johnny Ray.
And Mark.
Still to come, we got to talk about economics in one lesson. We're way behind, as we sort of are perennially on this book. It's a great book when we do get around to talking about it. We've been doing it chapter by chapter. We're overdue to talk about chapter 16, which is about price controls, and hopefully we can get into that coming up here in a bit. But your calls and thoughts come first. Excuse me, chapter 17, actually, is what we're going to be talking about here tonight. Ian, Johnny Ray, and Mark in the studio, to the phones, to the fun. Let's start out with Brian in Tennessee. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how's it going tonight, fellas?
What's on your mind, Brian?
I've been doing Uber Eats since the first of the year. I find it a great part-time thing. I'm using it to fatten up my 401k, you know. I'm mid-50s. But recently,
Uber Eats, just for listeners that don't know, this is for listeners that are unfamiliar, Uber, of course, probably well known as a ride sharing company. It operates in dozens of markets all around the globe. But this Uber Eats is a division of Uber where you're not delivering people from point A to point B. You're picking up food from some restaurant and then delivering it to its intended recipient. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
And there are some places, you know, that puts me in mind back of I've been listening to y'all for a long time. I mean, there was some lady down in Georgia that was cooking food, you know, and they were harassing her. But where I live, it's pretty much they're letting people cook wherever they can and pick it up wherever they can.
All right.
But my reason for calling is they changed their terms of service. And the part I understand is, They want to make as much money as possible.
As Uber's
and I understand
PRT?
As a contract.
Sorry about that.
And I understand as a contract worker, I'm not an employee. I mean, if they say that's what they're going to pay me, and I decide to accept that, I can deal with that.
So what did they do? Reduce the payouts?
No. The payout isn't reduced anymore. They take away the unnecessary. Task of having to look at what they actually took out. I mean, they're cut out of all of it, which is where we are right now. What brings me to this?
So they're not, just to clarify, they're not showing you the full amount of the sale. You're only getting to see what you take away. You don't get to see what the customer paid.
Right, exactly. But okay. I can still deal with that. I mean, in the free market, that's the way some transactions work. I can deal with that.
So you're getting paid. Let's make sure we're kind of on the same page here and we understand how this works. You're driving, you go to a place, you pick up the order for the customer. Has the customer already paid for the order, or do you have to pay for it, then the customer pays it back?
The customer's already paid for the order.
Okay.
But this part right here doesn't have anything to do with food. It's actually got to do with people. But, you know, once you're in the organization, you're in the organization. It's just a different department.
Mm-hmm.
They've set up a system where you live, pretty much demographics and all that other stuff that they've got, that they've got an idea of how much you will pay for that service to be picked up for that ride or whatever.
Right.
And so you might be one place in one neighborhood, and they'll charge you, it'll be a $25 ride, you know, to go from here to the airport. But if you're in another neighborhood, no matter what the distance, it might be an entirely higher or lower cost.
Mm, interesting. Okay.
And so basically, the customer is shown one route that, you know, to get them there, you know, and what else, and the driver's shown another route. The driver's shown the shorter route, and of course, the customer's shown the longer route. Which, of course, hey, I understand. Hey, that's the difference between, you know, that's your profit margin. I understand all that.
It seems kind of shifty.
Yeah, that seems pretty.
That's
pretty nasty to me.
Going on, that doesn't seem very understandable.
I don't think it's okay to lie to your customers.
And there's been this huge. Well, I won't say huge because this is the gig market, so you don't know exactly how many people are out there with them. But you know the numbers. They say Uber has millions of drivers because they can only keep 4% of them. there's some type of strike going on, or delete Uber or whatever, to
really?
Get them to change to up the terms of service or whatever for more of the money.
Talking about? It sounds familiar because I remember we talked about a hashtag delete Uber. That was when people were upset because Uber, you know, sort of they want to have contractors, but some of these people want to be employees because they want to get health coverage. They want Uber to take care of them.
I don't want to be their employee. I want to be a contract worker for them because that way I know y'all hate this word, but hey. At least I can make it work on my taxes. Like I said, I'm using it to fatten up my 401k.
Okay.
By the time you put $6K in there for the 401k and you write off all your other expenses as a contractor, it pays for itself. So at least if you do it part-time and you're my age. I wouldn't say if you're doing it full-time, you're out there busting your butt. And, hey, that's the cost of being in business. And they're thinking, like you said, employees. Like, well, how come they don't take care of this for me? No, you're in business for yourself.
A problem with the mindset of the people who are complaining and working for Uber in this case. They're used to being taken care of by companies because that's what the government has forced employers to do. And so when they're finally out striking out on their own and responsible for themselves, their reaction in these people's cases is to demand that their situation be similar to what they've always had, rather than going out and just learning for themselves how to get health insurance or whatever it is that they're looking for. But that's a whole other issue. So what specifically on the Uber Eats thing did you want to, was there something else you wanted to share about it?
Well, no, it wasn't the Eats. It was the terms of service. That basically people are they're getting charged by what Uber thinks you will pay and not by the actual route.
I see what you're saying.
I mean, it's
based on their demographics.
If you walk into the pizza joint and they say, well, you'll pay $50 for this pizza. That's what we're going to charge you.
I see what you're saying.
Right.
And so wouldn't that also encourage the drivers? Because normally when you work for Uber, you get rides or, hires based on your vicinity, based on how close you are to the person who needs the service. So wouldn't that encourage the drivers to, say, hang out in the rich neighborhoods? Because if somebody's in their mansion, they're more willing to pay a $25 service fee to have a Subway sandwich dropped off at their house than, say, somebody who's living in the ghetto who's not likely going to be willing to pay that much. So it is interesting.
But interestingly enough, you get just as many deliveries to the ghetto. these people, they got to eat. And it goes back to that. God, I wish I could remember the lady's name. She was down in Georgia. She was frequently on your show a few years ago.
This is Mama
Allie. That was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
If Mama Allie was in Nashville, Tennessee right now, she'd be making a fortune because it's just too easy with Uber Eats. You can order food from anywhere, and if it's worth the price, people will order from one side of town to the other all day.
That's amazing. I'm glad that it's working out for you, Brian, and thanks for calling to share that with us tonight. We appreciate it. By the way, in the other Uber-related news, because we actually haven't talked about Uber in quite a while, whatever the headlines have been, they haven't come across Free Talk Live, and we were pretty fascinated by this for a while, and it still is interesting to watch as they continue to fight it out with these various governments around the country. According to Fortune magazine, Uber and Lyft are coming back to Austin. This, according to, I guess, is a pretty fresh story. Yeah, posted today. So starting tomorrow, ride-hailing platforms Uber and Lyft are expected to return to operations in Austin Monday when Texas Governor Greg Abbott will sign a bill likely overturning the state capitol's strict driver screening rules. It's unclear, however, what kind of reception the companies can expect after winning a dirty fight with one of the country's largest, most influential, and most cantankerous cities. Both Uber and Lyft, as you may recall if you were listening, ceased operations in Austin last year because of those rules, which were first implemented in late 2015. A particular sticking point was a requirement that all drivers be fingerprinted, a rule which applies to other professional drivers in the city, but which Uber and Lyft described as burdensome. And they said, all right, well, we'll just leave town. And that's what they did. And now it looks like the state government might be overturning that particular rule. So it's nice to see that Uber and Lyft didn't break on this one. They held firm, and they're getting their territory back. More coming up. Free Talk Live, dial on in toll free and bring up whatever you want. It's the Live Sunday edition, and as always, you can dial up at toll free number 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. With you in the studio tonight, you've got Ian,
Johnny Ray,
and Mark.
And you don't need money to do business on Simbi.com. It's a slick and easy to use marketplace where you can trade your talents for other people's services and abilities. You can forget the old economy. This is your economy. It's Simbi.com, S-I-M-B-I, Simbi.com. You won't believe the diversity of the services available at Simbi.com. Hundreds of thousands of people like you are acting within the symbiotic economy. Go get your account at Simbi.com. Take a look around and post your services, Simbi.com. As we continue, we'll go to your calls and thoughts. Then coming up, we got economics in one lesson, hopefully. It's Scott in Massachusetts. You're on Free Talk Live listening to WBNW in Concord. Go ahead, Scott.
Good evening, Mark, Ian, and Johnny Ray. Tonight's message, I'd like to discuss America's veterans. I honor America's veterans. Monday, tomorrow, May 29th, 2017, is Memorial Day, as you know. It is also the 100th anniversary of John F. Kennedy's birth. I will not talk about John F. Kennedy because he was a gigolo while president and he had no morals in Massachusetts. John F. Kennedy is
John
a god.
John F. Kennedy was a gigolo? That's a new allegation.
While he was president, he most certainly was. Yes, he had women brought into the White House.
He was paid for sex?
No. He was getting Marilyn Monroe. He was a sex machine. That's what he was.
Well, that's different than being a gigolo. You understand that, right? A gigolo is a man who is paid for sexual, interactions.
Well, people will often call people who are promiscuous can I say the W word?
Yeah. Whore?
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
Which is synonymous with a prostitute.
Though he was still a veteran, he was a war hero, so I thank him for his service. But to me, America's veterans are the very best and most noble human beings that America can ever produce.
Why?
Because they give the ultimate to their country. They fight. They serve America. They
Why is that noble? They're doing the dirty work of politicians who are the least noble of people.
I agree. It's always
how can one be noble when one is doing dirty work for scum?
I think one can be brave, courageous, have a good heart, these kinds of things. I suppose you can have a noble heart, noble intentions.
As you drop bombs on innocent people?
Well, I think that if you believe that is the, you know, the right thing to do. Sure, mm-hmm. It's a noble intention.
But shouldn't you know better? I mean, shouldn't most people know that politicians are scum of the earth?
Absolutely. When you send a kid for 13 years to government school, and then at the end of that government school, they go to work for the government, absolutely.
They've been brainwashed.
They should know better, but they don't because they've spent 14 years, in government schools. No wonder. Mm. There's no organization on the planet that has such good indoctrination as the politicians in Washington, D.C. and capitals around the world.
And they've got a solid recruiting plan. I mean, get them while they're young, right?
Yeah, I'd like to just, if I could, just finish my, it won't take long. My father served during the Korean War and my uncle during World War II. Those were the days when patriotism in America was at its zenith and sacrifice was a badge of honor. But unfortunately, those days are gone forever and will never return. Today, America does not even know what patriotism is, and America does not value patriotism anymore.
Isn't patriotism the same thing that's always been, blind devotion to one's government?
Yes, it is, and I'm going to get to that.
Well, that's not a value.
Our God is the almighty dollar. And the gist of it is this, gentlemen, is that America is not worth fighting and dying for anymore. That's what the point I'm trying to make.
I'll agree with you on that much, but I don't think it ever was.
They're fighting for greedy. They're fighting. I know you get annoyed at me, Mark, but I'm going
to
be honest.
You
got
to back off that phone, dude. You need to get a new phone, really, honestly, because this one's pretty bad.
They're fighting for greedy international.
It's not that much better.
Jewish Wall Street bankers, not all of them are Jews, but most of them are. They're fighting for greedy and evil politicians. They're fighting for big oil, Exxon Mobil. They're fighting for big pharma.
So isn't the best thing that you can do now? Now, look, we disagree.
Anymore, I've lost all faith in America. That's what I'm telling you.
Look, Scott, you and I disagree on, you know, you're a racist, but we separate ways on that. But I do agree with your general, you know, viewpoint that America, the government more specifically, the U.S. federal government is not worth fighting for, and it has never been worth fighting for in my lifetime. They do not do honest things, and they didn't do them in the past either. I mean, they murdered Indians. They've done all kinds of horrific things, and, you know, fighting for a criminal gang is not an honorable thing to do. I understand that people believe that there's some honor in it, and that in the moment of their fight, they might do something honorable, like save, you know, one of their buddies or save some kid from a burning village or whatever, unless, of course, they're the ones who torched the village in the first place, which isn't unheard of. But regardless, I'm with you on that much. Gentlemen, you want to comment? Johnny Ray is actually formerly
of
the military.
Johnny Ray is a veteran. Are you going to take you
to
task
for this?
Well,
thank you for your service.
No, I think that, for the most part, sacrifice is for I think that our heroes were well-meaning dupes.
I agree.
And these days, I think technology is taking us forward. And I think that people don't have that 1950s mindset where everything is for the state and for the flag, where we've got new media telling us really some of the dreadful things that our state and every other state around the world is doing. I think the collectivism and communism is losing its grip on the world, and ultimately, I'm excited for the future. As a veteran, I was duped, but
how
was
old
looking
were you when
for
you joined?
20.
20, okay.
Well, I think I was 19.
Okay.
What war were you in, Johnny Ray?
I was not in a war. I was in between Desert Shield, and I got out right before Desert Storm. So I was very lucky. But while I was in, I was bored sitting on my butt. I wanted there to be a war that I could go to and gain some glory.
Thank goodness that didn't happen.
Yeah, I would have got, because I'm such an idiot, I would have got my nuts shot off, and I would have gotten somebody else killed. So I'm glad I didn't go to war.
You know what gets me very angry? Donald Trump's children, I assure you, they would never be called up for a draft.
No, of course not.
And none of these politicians would either, their children. So it is a double standard. It is a double sword. And Ian, I want to give you an explanation. Now, yes, I have. You've been fair to me, and I've been an anti-Semite on your airwaves. I want you to tell you why I'm an anti-Semite. On September 15th, 2008, I had my broker call me, and I had $190,000 swindled from me when Lehman Brothers went under. Richard Fuld was the disgraced CEO. He destroyed Lehman Brothers. I blame Jews for my loss of my money, Ian.
Well, that's ridiculous, because you want to blame somebody, you should blame whichever individuals were in charge of losing your money.
A small handful of people that swindled you happen to be a certain ethnicity. That doesn't mean you go after the whole ethnicity. Now, I told you that I found out relatively recently that I've got some Jewish ancestry. Is it my fault that you had Lehman Brothers, something to do with Lehman Brothers, you swindle $190,000?
No, it's not. But let me tell you something. Richard Fuld, I don't know if you ever heard of him before.
Yeah, I've heard the name. I saw.
He's living in a mansion in Greenwich, Connecticut. He's
that
a multi-billionaire, probably a billionaire. He ripped off not only me, but tens of thousands of other investors. He needs to go to prison. He needs to go where Bernie Madoff
is. Is that going to get your money back?
What's that?
Is that going to get your money back?
No, it's not.
Probably not.
But it would give me some satisfaction.
Right. Thank you for the call tonight. We can talk to you another night. We got other folks who want to get on here, but I'm going to get you a different phone line. We'll see if we can get a clearer connection for the future. More coming up.
This is Riley Blake, producer of the Free Talk Live Daily Digest. In addition to the Digest, I host my own weekly podcast called Anarcho Agenda, providing you liberty-oriented content without all the statism. Subscribe to Anarcho Agenda on iTunes, Google Play, or visit anarchoagenda.libsyn.com. That's anarchoagenda.libsyn.com for further details.
Free Talk Live, and you can dial toll-free right here to bring up whatever you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Joining you tonight in the studio, it's Ian.
Johnny Ray.
And Mark.
And so health insurance, it's a pretty messed up situation in the United States, but Mark, it turns out you don't have to have it.
You don't have to have health insurance. You can be part of a health sharing organization. HealthExcellenceSelect.com really makes it very, very easy to participate that way, because not only do they give you, coverage isn't the right term, but, help you to defer the costs of your, medical care by sharing with other people, but you also can get from them a daily health assessment if you want it. No charge, 24-hour access to doctors. A medical information card that you can give to other, providers. Because of HIPAA, they don't really communicate very well. They don't know what you've got and all that other stuff. This really cuts down. What they intend to do is to make you healthier. They don't want to treat your sickness. They want to make you healthy. HealthExcellenceSelect.com. You'll love the service and the price, because, less than $600 to cover a family. HealthExcellenceSelect.com per month, I should say.
We're going to go to your phone calls and thoughts. You can bring up anything you want. Daryl is on the line in Albuquerque listening to Kiva. Hello, Daryl.
Hey, man, just tuned in. It's a Sunday evening, holiday evening, and I will catch you guys from now on in this time slot, because great show. I was kind of tunnel vision about a lot of stuff, but you guys are opening up and making me think about it a little bit. And in the earlier session, I'll get right to it, you were talking about Morpheus and the Bitcoin type stuff. That's amazing. I had heard some stuff, but I haven't really heard any talk show people talk about this. I've seen little bits and pieces in the Wall Street Journal and the all that sort of stuff. But amazing show, very informative. The question I have for you is, one of you punched in a website for a federal type of website that you could find out what cases are pending on and stuff.
Yeah.
That was fascinating to me. Would you mind giving me that website again?
It's called PACER. And I forget offhand what the acronym stands for, but PACER.gov. It's the Federal Court Case Lookup System. You register for an account. They do require that you give them credit card information to register for the account. However, they give you your first $15 per quarter year. So every 3 months, you have $15 worth of credit that you can use for free. And you can go and look up any old case you want. So, you know, if you want to look up Thomas Costanzo, which is the Morpheus's real name, you can look up his case, or, you know, Ross Ulbricht, or whoever it is that's got a case in the federal system, and you can see the full docket. You can see all the filings, with the exception of redacted filings, which do appear occasionally that you can't see. But for the most part, you can get all the motions and all the, you know, decisions and orders from the judge in any given case. But the most important thing that you need to know about the PACER system, because it is, again, what they'll do is they charge by the page. So it's 10 cents a page. So if you got a 20-page motion that you want to download, that's a $2 cost. And so it's not hard if you want to look at more than a few cases. It's not hard at all to hit that $15 limit. And obviously, you know, you don't want to give any more money to the federal government than you have to. So staying below that $15 is always a nice thing to do. So there's an interesting tool that some activists came up with called Recap. So anybody that's going to go access the PACER system, before you do that, you need to install the Recap plugin for your Firefox or Chrome browser. Recap is PACER spelled backwards, of course. And what Recap does is whenever you're on PACER and you look up any case, Recap will let you know if it's already in the Recap database. So the idea behind Recap is if a thing that you download, some sort of motion for a court case, is not already, you know, if somebody else with Recap hasn't already downloaded that, you'll download it from the federal PACER system, and PACER will, you know, amount whatever that charge is, you know, say 50 cents or a dollar or whatever. And then once you download it, Recap is always watching whenever you're on the PACER site, and Recap will ingest that file into their system. So that way, the next time anybody wants to go and download that file, if they're using the Recap system, you don't have to download it from the feds. Recap will provide it and provide it free of cost. So basically what they're doing is they're using crowdsourcing, the, you know, hundreds or thousands of people who have this Recap plugin who are accessing whatever various cases on the PACER system. They're essentially crowdsourcing all of those PDF files into a free database, which is maintained by the Recap people. Does that make sense that I explained that understandably?
You know what? That was erudicial. Unbelievable.
Thanks.
Wow. I just, because a light bulb just went off, because I had a friend that has a lawyer that just went through law school, and now she's clerking for the New Mexico Supreme Court. And he mentioned, he says, now there's some sort of program or government thing that they go to look at all the precedent for and how they get all their case knowledge. And that's how they, and I said, really, a little secret thing? And you just filled in. That was an insight you gave me right there, because, and very well explicated. Wow.
There you go.
Unbelievable job, man. Thank you. I'm going to take that knowledge and employ it tomorrow, and I'll be listening next Sunday. You on every Sunday?
Yeah, we're on
seven days a week.
I know Kiva's got us on some of those times, not all, I don't think all 21 hours, but whenever we're on there, thank you for listening. And if you want to listen to us online when they don't have us, you can always find us over at freetalklive.com. And Daryl, thanks for your call tonight. Speaking of Kiva, we just happen to have the program director on the line as well. Eddie is on the line, presumably listening to his own station, Kiva, in Albuquerque. Hey, Eddie.
Hey, I did not tell Daryl to call. That's a great call.
Yeah.
And Daryl, we're on every Saturday and Sunday. And I should air you guys. Congratulations, Ian. Number 29 on Talkers.
Thank
and
you.
Number two in your time slot. Did you know that? The only guy that you're behind is Mark Levin.
Oh, yes, I know.
Where did you hear now? Where did you hear that?
You can count.
Well, because I do the math. That's right. Exactly right.
Oh, you mean you were looking at the Talkers list and you deduced it from their top 10.
Look at the last caller just butters him up on what a brilliant guy he is. And he's like, I can't even look at the other people on the Talkers list. I don't know how many there are.
So I will tell you, though, next time, Ian, next time you guys have some sort of anti-Semitic guy who literally is a racist, like the way that guy is, I mean, I don't mind pulling you guys off, though, by the same token. That kind of talk is just total hate. And I have to tell you that I was livid when I heard a guy talk the way that he did and just make this sort of blanket statement about everything. I want to talk to you about something specifically, though, that you guys have been, that Daryl alluded to. And I don't know,
we don't,
Daryl,
before you go on, we don't take somebody off the air because they have an opinion. We are going to counter that opinion. We're going to talk about those terrible ideas and explain, you know, why they're so
bad. It's horrible.
and terrible.
It's so horrible. I couldn't even stand to listen to the guy, to be quite honest. But let me say something. You guys, I want to talk about Bitcoin.
All
because
right.
You guys have been ahead of the curve on everything. And the Bitcoin is, I don't know where it's gone, but I'm getting all these things in my Facebook feed and news feed. And suddenly everyone's interested in Bitcoin. You guys were interested in Bitcoin from a long time ago.
That's
and
right.
Without divulging exactly how much money that you guys have made, Ian, every single time I see that, I have to think that you have made some money, that you've done okay. Can you kind of talk about that just a little bit? Because I think you're ahead of even Wall Street at this point. And some of the things that you're talking about, you know, market analysis, about ways to market your company, small business, you know, trading, you know, new ways of doing business. I really think that this is the future should anything come down. But, you know, even in spite of that, just anything in general, because the Bitcoin stuff, I know you guys have made at least a little bit of money. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. So Roger Ver, we had him on in the first hour of the show tonight, and anybody that missed that interview can always go grab it over at freetalklive.com later tonight. He's the proprietor over at bitcoin.com, and we really owe our Bitcoin success, what level of it that we've had, to Roger, because he saw the vision. He dragged us into it, basically, he was an advertiser of ours for his company Memory Dealers, which is a computer memory manufacturer in Tokyo. So he was advertising with the show for a long time, and then he got into Bitcoin because he heard us talking about it. And we'll tell you the rest of the story if you want to hang. We'll bring it back, Eddie, more in moments here.
Yeah,
this is Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live, and you can dial toll-free here. Bring up whatever's on your mind. In these remaining moments, there's enough time for you. If you dial right now, our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom, 855-450-3733. So we're going to get back into the Bitcoin talk here in a moment. We were inquired of by Eddie in New Mexico, the program director / owner of Kiva, which is our affiliate down there. We're going to bring him back on. But I do want to let you know about the brand new Free Talk Live, LRN.FM, Patreon, which I launched over the weekend here. You can go to patreon.lrn.fm, and we're trying something new. There was a discussion amongst our Free Talk Live amplifiers, and those are the people who give at least $5 a month to Free Talk Live to help us advertise, market, and promote Free Talk Live. And for a while, it had been sort of like the Free Talk Live LRN amp program. LRN is the Liberty Radio Network. That is my little internet stream where we're on there, and a bunch of other Liberty-oriented shows are on there. It's a 24/7 live streaming audio network with libertarian content around the clock. And so the AMP program was, to some extent, supporting that as well. And due to the discussions we've been having, decided to split that off. So to take the LRN factor from the AMP program and kind of make it its own fundraiser for the people who are in support of the idea of having satellite coverage of LRN.FM broadcast all around the globe. We've got two satellites right now, one over North and Central America. It's called Galaxy 19, and another one over sub-Saharan Africa called SES-5 that are airing Free Talk Live and the dozens of other great shows on LRN.FM around the clock. And, you know, I wanted to see if that has, you know, support. Let's break it out. Let's see how much support it has, because some people in the AMP program wanted to see their AMP dollars just going to Free Talk Live to promote this show specifically rather than going to spreading the satellite signal, which I like both of those things, but not everybody likes both of those things. So the idea was, let's split it off and, you know, do some other stuff with the AMP money, like refocus that. And we've got some announcements coming up for that, too. But the first step was to split off the LRN.FM satellite fundraiser, and that's happening now. It's ongoing. So the last 2 years we've done satellite fundraisers, we've used Indiegogo. And that's like a limited time thing. You can only do 30 or 60 days with Indiegogo. So we did two 60-day things over the last couple of years and, you know, got some level of support for it. So I figured, well, let's see what happens if we can do ongoing monthly contributions for
this. Because LRN.FM is broadcast ongoing every month, every week, every day on satellites
across
the world or something.
And people are hearing that, you know, and there, you can go and check out the video that I made and the pitch over at patreon.lrn.fm. And, of course, it talks about our caller, Akko, from Cameroon and the experiences that he's had and how common these satellite receivers are in countries like Cameroon and other poorer countries in Africa. And to me, how important it is that those people should be able to hear the ideas of liberty, too. I mean, this shouldn't just be a United States-centric focus. So anybody that supports that global spread of the ideas of liberty, you really ought to go to patreon.lrn.fm. As we go back to Eddie listening on Kiva, he's the program director, the owner of the station. You were asking us about kind of your early experience with Bitcoin, and I was telling you how we kind of got dragged into it. I wish I could say that I was, you know, wise and hip to Bitcoin. I was aware that it existed. I thought it was a cool idea, but I'm just, you know, I'm not a professional investor, and I didn't think I should go right out and buy that. So instead, I just sat around and just reported on Bitcoin, and then eventually one of our listeners and supporters and advertisers, Roger Veer, who you heard at the beginning of the show tonight, he was a current advertiser with us, paying dollars at the time for his advertisements. Then he came to us, Mark, and he said, would you take Bitcoin for you for these ads? And we were
he said, I would like to, is what he said. And yeah. I interpreted that when you deal with a businessman to the level of Roger Veer, I don't interpret that as, gentlemen, I'd like to bring forth this idea and see what you think. I mean, he's an advertiser, and advertisers kind of have the advantage in that way. And so I asked him, could we just do the Sunday show? Because we were rolling out the Sunday show at that time. And then, you know, and then I can, you know, get a chance to see how this is working. And then we'll do the 7 day a week show later. And we did that. And so some months later, we switched to all 7 days.
So basically, had we had the vision for it, we would have said, yes, go ahead, pay us 100%.
We would be wildly wealthy right now.
We didn't. We were like, well, we're not so sure about this thing. So how about we let you pay 25%? And then it went to 50%. And then I think we went to 100%.
I think you've got your numbers wrong.
No,
but that's
okay.
Fine.
It seemed like that to me.
Yeah, it was It was 1/7, and then it was 100%.
So 15%.
Now we get more than it's about 85% of our revenue comes in crypto.
So we've got Bitcoin, we got Dash. These are the cryptocurrencies
wallet,
that are coming into us. Jax is paying with Bitcoin, though,
that's
right?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah. So, it's been a fun ride.
So if I can say one thing here, you probably have tens of thousands of dollars in Bitcoin based upon the appreciation of Bitcoin, I would imagine, at this point, or are we beyond that?
I don't think we really need to get into
I can
detail
tell you how much I have,
that.
But what would you have to say regarding it?
I think it's awesome, and I think more people should be involved in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I see you guys as constantly advertising Bitcoin, so I thought, well, these guys got in early. How come other people didn't get in early?
Here's the thing. Early on. I mean,
oh, it's still early
with Bitcoin. And so, you know, you can easily look back and kick yourself and say, oh, darn it, I should have gotten in when it was $10 a piece. You know, it's too late now for that, but it's not too late to get in at all, because you can always buy a fraction of a Bitcoin. Right now, one Bitcoin is going to cost you about $2,100 in U.S. dollars, but you can get a tenth of a Bitcoin or a hundredth of a Bitcoin, and so you can still, if all you got's $20 that you can spend, you can get $20 worth of Bitcoin. There are things called Bitcoin vending machines that are in pretty much all the major cities, where you literally just stick cash into a machine, and then Bitcoin appears on your phone. Or you can sign up for one of the more centralized Bitcoin brokerage houses or exchanges like Coinbase or, you know, ItBit or one of these other places. And then you can, you know, give up your personal information, your bank account information, and then get Bitcoin very, very cheaply compared to, say, what you'd pay.
Well, I appreciate you guys bringing it to the market. I think more people should be involved in it. And I'm just excited about, you know, the opportunity moving forward, because I have never seen something move like that. Until I started seeing this stuff in my Facebook feed, and everyone's like, well, if I would have invested this back in 2011, 2012, look how much I'd have today. And I guess that's where he's at.
You still would have done well if you'd invested it last year. I mean, Bitcoin at this time last year was about $600 per Bitcoin, so it's more than tripled in the last year alone. I mean, there's no doubt that Bitcoin has been the best performing investment across all investments in the last decade. But it's, you know, it's a wild ride. And if you're going to get into it, I say my strategy, and I'm no expert, is to just hold on. Just watch and wait and see what happens, because if you get thrown off by, you know, the day to day ups and downs of it, it'll really throw you for a loop, because it's all over the place.
Well, congratulations on your new ranking, by the way, Ian.
Thank you, Eddie. Well, we couldn't have done it without you.
What you guys do for the station.
Yeah, we couldn't have done it without great stations like yours that have the vision for having, you know, a show on that isn't your typical cookie cutter conservative, you know, talk radio show. And it takes some risk on a station's part, you know, to go out there and kind of put their foot out there like this and say, hey, you know, let's take a little risk with these new guys. And I appreciate that. Yeah. So thank you for the call tonight, man.
No problem.
Eddie Aragon from Kiva there in Albuquerque. And speaking of Albuquerque, Sarah is now on the line. Hello, Sarah.
Yes, just yesterday, our state legislatures decided to raise the gas tax at the state level. I'm quite shocked. So my question is, are we still going to have the city gas tax election on our ballot October 3rd?
Who's so our? You're talking about in New Mexico? Level? I have no idea.
The city of Albuquerque.
So that's a question. Yeah, but I was shocked. You know what? And you dug it up. You dug it up in the computer. But I think they were just messing around. We're not going. I never thought that they were really up to passing the gas tax at the state level, but they did it yesterday.
Well,
so I wonder,
unless the gas tax at the state level repealed the local municipality's ability to add their own tax, then there's a good chance that the municipal tax will still be on the ballot.
So then it's going to be added up to the state would tax it, and then the city could add their.
That's how it works in most places, yes, where cities also may tack on an extra tax on top of the state tax, is my understanding, at least, of how that works.
If the city is.
Yeah, but I can't believe they did it, and I'm so happy that they did.
Oh, I can believe it. The state's a money-grubbing organization that's going to, if money's changing hands, always want an ever-increasing percentage of it. Go ahead, Johnny.
I wonder if bus fares.
You took the words out of my mouth. If the city is intending to, if they're looking at that potential revenue, the fact that the state has earmarked some of it for themselves does not take their hunger away.
Oh, yeah, they're going to do it. Hey, Sarah, thanks for the call tonight. And if you didn't get in tonight, no worries. We've always got another show tomorrow. We're on 7 nights a week. You can join us online in the meantime over at freetalklive.com.
So the protection of life, liberty, and property is what the Free State Project is all about. But it's an effort to move 20,000 people who understand.
It's about demonstrating to the entire country
that, yeah, we can have a free market, a truly free market,
making it just a freer, great place to live.
It's the world's largest voluntarist libertarian community, and it's only getting bigger.
That's amazing, to be able to move to a place where other people like passionately believe in being free and independent.
What the Free State Project is managing to do, though, is to put their money where their mouth is. It's physically getting up across the country and saying, let's go someplace and let's demonstrate the power of these ideas. There's a lot of kind of philosophy that surrounds liberty. There's a lot of thinking about it and talking about it. But here in New Hampshire, people are doing it.
101 Reasons Liberty Lives in New Hampshire, a documentary by Free State Project Early Movers. Watch it free at 101reasonsfilm.com. 101reasonsfilm.com.